Who let the dogs out?
Who let the dogs out?
It's time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine. 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. With us today, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief vet at said Millerton Veterinary Practice. Hello, Dr. Cannon.
Good morning, Jill.
Well, straight to the question. Yes,
blustery day.
Yes, about which I've already complained, but I got really less sympathy than I would have wanted. So we'll just go straight to the questions.
Okay.
I like comfort for my veterinarian, not to sort of
buck
up. Yeah, right. All right, Carmen in Troy. This summer, I got my dog a Seresto collar. Like a lot of other stuff since the pandemic started, it was hard to find the collars online. Jackie is a medium-sized gal, 35 pounds, but all I could find were smaller large sizes. So I got a large and cut the end off. But then it occurred to me that maybe a large collar might actually contain more of whatever the active ingredient is. I wouldn't want to over-medicate her.
So this is absolutely fine. It's something that we have to do commonly. They apparently, we've checked with the company, and it's okay thing to do. It's not okay for lots and lots of other things, like heartworm pills and, I don't know, all kinds of medications that the medication is not distributed evenly through the product. But with the Seresto, you can do that. What's not a good idea, some people will, keep the collar really long and wrap it around twice. That could overdo it. So as long as you fit it to your dog and cut the end off, the extra end off, then you're all set.
It's sort of like the old-fashioned flea collar, which were diabolical, but you just put it on and then you sized it. Yeah, you got a small, medium, or large, and then
you cut off the extra. Yeah.
Well, that was very clever of them. Can you talk for 1 second though, because I'm not confident that everybody gets that. You can't just chop it in, like, okay, I'll cut a quarter off and then it will fit for my dog. I'm not even positive humans understand that, but let's talk about how that works in the veterinary world with other medications.
Oh, with other medications. So I often have people ask about, can I give a half of a heartworm prevention, excuse me, because for 50 to 100 pounds, because my dog is 25 pounds, that kind of thing. So they don't, pay attention. Excuse me, the company doesn't necessarily guarantee that the medication is evenly distributed through the pill, besides the fact that once it's out of the container, it gets really hard and may not be effective once you've taken it out of that hermetically sealed thing. Excuse me. And
with that, so that's pretty clear for sized, let's call it either heartworm or flea tick preventatives that are, but what about pills like carprofen, for example?
Yeah. If the pills are scored, if the pills are scored in half, then you can pretty much bet that, and they're not coated. You can pop them in half, so you should be able to also cut them in quarters because it's evenly distributed medication.
Okay, and is that how you know, because it is scored?
That's pretty much how we judge it. Although, with cats, we have to just cut things up sometimes.
Right.
We just, nobody knows for sure, but we have no other options. So it's problematic for kitties because of their small, and for very small dogs. So, for drugs like famotidine, which is an over-the-counter, we're making the assumption that we can cut it into quarters, and we've never had a problem with it. Usually it's safe things that we do that with.
Benadryl,
yep. Amlodipine, which is a blood pressure medication, we give cats a quarter of a tablet.
Okay.
So, I think it probably more applies to larger, chewable type things, but I can't tell you that is true for everything.
I want to ask a Dasiquin question because once they started putting, this is to me just comical. Once they started, they repackaged, and things do get repackaged. And this is a joint supplement, which is that accurate? Anyway, once they started putting eggshell membrane in it, one of my dogs who basically would spit it out like a comic strip every time, suddenly thought it was delicious. So we have an eggshell membrane song that we've had to compose because, But yeah. I'm just wondering, you don't have to sing a song or compose a song, but did something change in the taste, you know?
You know, I don't know, but they probably revamped the whole thing, I would guess, because I can't imagine eggshell membrane would make a difference in the flavor.
Nor can I, but it's just such an evocative concept.
Yeah, well, I think they put that in for, for its
benefits.
Purposes, right. For its benefits, yes.
All right, Dennis in Albuquerque, can you settle this for me and my wife? Marriage counselor.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, exactly. I want to say first that we live in an area where water needs to be conserved. We have two cats. Personally, I think we should leave their water dish out until they drink it all and only then fill it with fresh water. My wife says that by the second day, the water has dust and bits of kibble in it and insists on refilling it daily. I say cats would be happy drinking out of a puddle and no one ever died from drinking stale water. Your professional opinion? Can you recuse your... would you like to just recuse yourself and let me, or...?
no, I have no problem.
Okay.
I have no problem with this. I think that, cats prefer fresh water. Cats don't like to drink water to begin with. Cats only drink water, usually, if they're eating... if their food is too dry. So you can partially solve this problem, depending on where you live and how dry it is. You can partially solve this problem by feeding cats completely on canned food, because a young cat, especially on canned food, will rarely drink any water at all. And but that being said, if you're feeding any dry or if your cat is thirsty, they're not programmed to drink water, because in the wild, as they evolved, they just got plenty of water from meat. And so, they don't drink unless they have to. So encouraging them to drink is a good thing. So a little canned food with some water in it, and you've got to change that water at least twice a day. Cats like to have fresh, aerated water. So they'll drink from and they don't usually drink from a puddle. I haven't seen a cat ever drink from a puddle unless they absolutely have to. They'll drink from running water, though.
No, they love running water, but that's your clue. That's why I said I could do it, because if they'll drink from running water, they'll drink from fresh water, and you can do a cat test with water if they do drink, because the more fetid the water gets, and that's after there's one small cats are incredibly fastidious, so that's after there's one small piece of something floating in it. It's like they're done.
Or any dog spit.
Oh, yeah, dog spits. Although,
but you can conserve water. I think those water fountains.
Dribblers, yeah.
Yeah, it just continues to recycle the water and aerate it. And, that's an idea for conserving.
Especially when you're dealing with cats who, again, the wet food thing, and I'm just relearning this with them. I forgot, having had a most wonderful cat who was mature. I forgot how interesting it is to have someone much younger destroying the place. And, he views the dog dish not as something, since he's on wet food, as a water source, but as a swimming pool.
Oh, what fun.
So that's just ducky. But cats, because of their sometimes a cat will lap out of your water, your glass of water by the bed. I've known cats to do that. And but in terms of actual drinking, there's not that much that goes on, and you can really cut some of it with wet food.
Right.
And so.
Right in it. So for that reason, it's better. We all know about either we've had or know someone who's had a cat with kidney problems as they get older, and we suspect that's part of the problem is that those kidneys are not cared for with enough water through their lives, and so it is an issue in veterinary medicine.
All right. Alan in Pine Plains, our Dalmatian Scotty, had to have uric bladder stones removed this past winter. We were feeding him a low-purine wet food our vet recommended, but then my husband and I both lost our jobs, and the extra expense started catching up with us. We've crunched the numbers, and cooking at home for Scotty would be a significant savings, so we'd like some guidance on cooking a low-purine diet.
It is, so Dalmatians have a genetic defect that causes this that can cause this problem. And so they produce urate stones or uric acid bladder stones. So it is it's a congenital inherited DNA defect. So they are a little bit different, you know, and you can't just sort of formulate your own diet. There's just no way. So if you're really interested and you're thinking about years and years of cooking, of at-home cooking, and it's truly going to save you money, then what I would recommend is contacting or Googling the American College of Veterinary Nutrition, and you can go to their diplomat directory. They have information about certain of the board-certified nutritionists who will do a phone consultation. They also are they going to ask you for lots and lots of information. What does your dog like? What would you like to feed? You know, what sort of types of things do you want to have available? And then they would formulate a diet for you. I believe that they would be able to do that. This the Dalmatian is really tricky. So that's what I would recommend. That can cost, though. You know,
what it is that you're saving in. This is one of those that you really have to. You crunch your numbers in a different, slightly different way, considering that it's congenital and it's an issue with the kind of dog that you have, because it could well turn out that what you have to spend finding out what to cook for him is as much as you're going to save. Is as much as you're going to have to spend on the food that's already formulated that you know is okay.
That's correct. That being said, I'm always a proponent of home-cooked food. So if it comes out to be a wash and it's $500 or $600 to get the consultation, and when I say consultation, it's a lot of information. So the you know it's a lot of back and forth. So it's a lot of time that these veterinarians spend working on these diets. So you know if, in fact, you have a dog who's 4 years old and you plan on cooking for them for the rest of their lives, you know, it may save you money in the long run and probably would be a better diet. So, but it isn't going to be simpler and a lot cheaper.
So I want to ask about then, because there are so many different formulated diets. You know, there's the kidney diet, there's the you name it. There's the fiddly tummy diet. There's the arthritis diet. There's the that you can just and the older I get, the more fascinated I become by the pet food industry and the marketing, you know, to that effect, because there's an entire generation that just is like, oh wow, so cool, I can get one of these, and they don't. There's no real sense of. Unintended consequences or ancillary, you know, side effects.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering, by and large, is there a rule of thumb for, you know, not somebody as decrepit as I, for example, you know, just newly into this, newly into the realm of petdom, just in terms of what is sold, you know, some brands.
You mean diets in general,
yeah,
or prescription diets?
Well, prescription diets. More because many vets, anecdotally, there are vets and they will, their best solution to the situation is to say, okay, you know, let's put him on a prescription, him or her on a prescription diet.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah. And oftentimes the prescription diets do make it easier and perhaps in the end less expensive especially when you consider your time. But there's, I mean, this realm of nutritionists doing consultations and actually helping people to formulate diets for dogs with problems, I think is a really wonderful thing. You get lots of guidance. You're able to give your pets fresh food, and you're starting out with a pet who has a health problem to begin with, and now you're able to if you're able to do the cooking, you know, you're able to actually give them some fresh food with more nutrients, and I think a better overall diet, you know, if you're willing to put the work in and the money in order to do that. And you think about if you're, you know, you're feeding for long term, you know, it's not, it may not be terribly expensive.
Right.
In the end, I know that I've used a nutritionist before, and you know she her base charge, you know she's going to I think a $250 or something like that for the consultation, but it's going to end up depending on how complicated the situation is, you know you're going to end up adding to that with time and more consultations until you get it right.
Gotcha.
So I don't know what the cost will be.
And one of the other things that's being heavily advertised now is fresh pet food that you know that comes in a vacuum sealed thing.
Yeah.
Are you having any experience with that? Of you know any news on that? I mean, it just seems pretty costly, but I don't know.
Well, it is expensive. You mean the dog food that you can have you
that
can
you
just
put
have
in the
it sent to you?
It's sent and it's I think it's the farmer something, and it comes in a box, and you put it in the fridge, and then you open it up.
Yeah, yeah. So there are a couple of companies that are doing that. I would go with the company who has a nutritionist, a veterinary board-certified nutritionist. These people have to go through really rigorous training. And if they are okaying that homemade diet, then you're good to go. And for many people, it's worth the money not to have to do it yourself.
Okay.
And I've forgotten the names of the.
That's
companies.
Right. I mean, that's
yeah,
it's just a good thing to look for, and just because Dalmatians, you know, who knew they had a genetic defect or a congenital situation, are there any other you know top of list dogs that need special that come to mind, like automatic, or is it Dalmatian, you know, with bladder?
Yeah, you know, that specifically, I think, is the one that is the only one that comes to mind. But we have a lot of, you know, a lot of animals with kidney problems that could, in fact, the kidney diets are pretty darn good, but, you know, they could benefit from homemade food, especially if your dog has many other problems.
Gotcha. All right, Aura in Middleburg. My cat can't get enough scritches on her lower back, literally. It's like once somebody starts scritching her, there she goes out of her mind for more. It's super cute in a way, but also it's maybe weird that she literally cannot get enough. You have to just walk away at a certain point. She will never be satisfied. I thought it was just her quirk, but is there something up with her physically that would explain it?
Well, it depends on whether she's itchy all over. So, number one, I would check her very well for fleas because it sounds to me like she, you know, she may be itchy, but it's possible, too, that she might just like being rubbed or scratched in that area. I'm assuming, you know, this is lower back, right in front of her tail kind of area, and cats do like to be touched in that area. But if they're particularly itchy, so fleas, you want to look for licking that same area or licking all over grooming, scratching up around the neck, is the hair thinning. So, you know, if her coat and if there's no scratching, no excessive grooming, and her coat looks fine, then, you know, house cats are hedonists and they just love to be touched and they love to be petted, and the butt goes up when you scratch them there, and you just have to choose how long you want to spend with that. If she were sensitive there, and you know you started scratching her, and then she yowled and turned around and whacked you, that would be a different story. But it sounds to me like she's just liking it. But cats can have allergies. They can have flea allergy. They can have inhalant allergies, you know, like environmental pollen type things. They can also have food allergies, which can cause itch in the skin. So you have to weed that out.
All right. I don't know. This one definitely, absolutely, and this one sounds like you've got a cat who you should hire a professional scritcher for.
Or let her rub up against something, right? My
right.
cats love to rub up against the dog's paws
right.
when they're sleeping because they're rough, I guess. Then the dogs don't seem to mind.
Yeah, it's really fascinating what arrangements. The translation is amazing because again this cat has adopted out the usually blind hostile spaniel, and that is his security blanket.
Oh yeah, that's cute.
It is. It's just weird, especially when the tail starts going and. Anyway, moving on to Lindsay in Kingston. I'm hearing ads all the time on NPR for something called Absorbine Sanipet. It's to kill 99% of germs on horses and dogs, of which I have both. You're not supposed to use it on cats, though I have one of those as well. I have been using Absorbine Liniment on my horse for years, and it's a company I feel okay about. The liniment's basically just spearmint oil. But I really don't know if keeping germs off of animals is even a good idea.
And that's the key, right?
Right.
That was a good observation. Okay.
On the other hand, I do have to travel locally for work, so that means sometimes strangers are touching the animals. I just want to know what vets are saying about this kind of thing.
You know, I don't know what vets are saying about this. I hadn't actually heard about it, but I think that killing 99% of germs on anything, if it's alive, is not a good idea. You know, germs, we're talking about bacteria. Well, I suppose we're talking about viruses and bacteria. But you're going to kill off that bacteria. And you're going to kill off a lot of the normal bacteria. And that is really what enables us to live, is the, the bacteria, the billions, there are normally billions of bacteria on the surface of our skin that keep us healthy and prevent other infections. And so they're harmless to us, but they're very protective. And so, you know, going around killing off, even using antibacterial soap, you know, I'm not a proponent of it. Use regular soap. You can wash the bacteria down the drain with the soap. And in any case, there's no evidence still that I have heard. There's no evidence that people are getting coronavirus off of their pets.
No, this one doesn't even look like a coronavirus thing. This just looks like an anti-germ. Okay.
But I think that's probably why people are. Why are they marketing this Sanipet thing right now?
Because one of the things this being marketed because marketing doesn't necessarily have a whole lot to do with common sense. Okay, we'll just leave it there before I get on my soapbox and ruin the rest of your show. But. I had never heard of Sanipet. I don't know why you would want to kill 99% of germs on anybody, because I don't know how that works. And all I know, once again, being decrepit, is that there are, it's hard enough to have you got to work out your immune system a little bit. And so, de-germ. I mean, unless you've got a condition where you do have to live in a bubble, creating something that doesn't allow your body to just do its thing is going to have long-term consequences. No.
Yes. And if you do have a pet and you're immunocompromised, then you know having your pet shouldn't be around other people in this pandemic.
Right.
I think that would be the safest thing to do. And you know, they need that bacteria. So you're spraying something on them to kill it all. You're just asking for problems, in my opinion.
And this is why we have you on. So thank you very much, Dr. Cannon. This has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440. MillersonVet.com. Who let the dogs out? Who?